Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Saturday, January 5th, 2013. This is episode 941. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your iPhone, iPad, MacBook, or Android smartphone. Find out what your gadget's worth and get cash to upgrade to the latest at gazelle.com. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. And it's time to talk computers, the internet, cell phones and camcorders, MP3 players, home theater, and all that jazz. If you're into a tech, this is the place for you. And if you're not into tech, but you just want to understand how to use it, this is the place for you. Phone number is 8888-ASK-LEO. That's 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. Outside the U.S., you can always use Skype and call me. The number is toll free in the U.S. I mean, Skype out will work toll free outside the U.S. 888-827-5536. We also have a website, techguylabs.com, if you want to reach us through the website. In fact, that's a good way to get to the chat room. I love the chat room. The chat room is my externalized brain. I am living in the future. Here we are in 2013. First show of the new year. 2013 feels like the future anyway. It feels like a date in a sci-fi movie. 2013. Wow. But I live even farther in the future because I have taken my brain. Yeah, I still have a portion of it. Seem to have a smaller portion of it every year. But the rest of it resides in the communal hive mind of our internet relay chat room. See, this is clever of me. As I remember less and less, they remember more and more. So you'll see this happen during the show every once in a while. I'll say, what was the name of that program that did that thing? And somebody, inevitably, Caffeine-Free Dave or Smokey Bear or Beatmaster or Fushigi or somebody in the chat room, they all have crazy handles there, will say, oh, yeah, Leo, that's a... And I'll go, you see? It was a good thing I stored that information in the chat room. Everybody should have one of these. Maybe that's I know that's the kind of the idea behind this trend. One of the big trends of 2013, which will be wearable computing. And the idea will be that you will have, we already see this. Humans are funny because we have no sense of history or the past. It's just right now. We live in the right now. You know, you can kind of nostalgically remember back. I remember the days before there were ATMs. Remember that? You know, you can nostalgically remember. Remember when you used to actually dial a phone instead of push the buttons? Remember when you used to have a phone in the house instead of a cell phone? You know, you can nostalgically remember that. But we're not good at remembering the grand sweep of history. We don't have a good handle on that. What was I saying? Chat room, what am I talking about? Anyway, the future is coming. It's wearable computing. It's the thing everybody's talking about. And Google started this all with, the chat room says, we have no idea what you're talking about. Everybody says in the year 2013, one of the big trends will be wearable computing. I mean, we're doing that. Is when you wear your cell phone, you're carrying around the internet with you. That's a change that is dramatic that perhaps we've not noticed. But remember the time when you had to, you know, if you wanted to know something, you had to go to a library and go to the stacks and look it up, and maybe a few hours later you'd know that fact. Remember, you know, sitting in a movie theater going, what was she in before? What's that? I know her face from somewhere. And then you have no, you know, you'd have a bet with somebody. You can, they're bar bets. You can't have bar bets anymore because everybody knows everything. There's no mysteries anymore. You're sitting in Prometheus saying, she looks so familiar. What was she in? All you have to do is pull out your cell phone, go to IMDb online, and within seconds, you go, oh, yeah, she was the girl in the dragon tattoo. Oh, yeah. So we don't, you know, we have in a way externalized our brains. And the next step, of course, we are wearing computers, but you have to take it out. You have to turn it on. You know, oh, that's too many steps. The next step is to have it built in. Google's doing this Google Glass project. And supposedly this is the year Google Glass will come out. I don't know. You see, it's kind of dorky right now, and I think it's still far from perfect. It's my suspicion. Because they won't let anybody play with it. They're very nervous about letting anybody touch it. But it's a pair of glasses you wear. Now, I guess you could if you're like me and you wear eyeglasses, you could have prescription Google glasses. It seems kind of silly. If you don't wear glasses, you're going to wear glasses? Well, clear with clear lenses, I guess, or no lenses. But you put these things on, and there's a little screen. And you look to your lower left, and there's a computer screen. And you can, there's an interface. I've seen people swipe the temple. So there's some stuff going on. But the idea would be that you look at a monument and it pops up on your screen automatically. We're getting to that point, really. Google's slowly getting to that point where the Google Now application, which is only available on the newest Google devices that have the Jelly Bean interface. Google Now is kind of to get us used to this. I have it on my Galaxy Note here. I'll pull up Google Now. What it does is it knows where you are, knows where you're going, it knows what your commute is, it knows what, you know, sports teams you're interested in, has your calendar. So I'm looking at my Google Now on my Galaxy Note, and it says it's chilly, it's 45 degrees here in town. I have my next appointment. I view nearby events. It knows I'm a Niners fan, so it's probably going to say, oh, by the way, the next Niners game is a week from Sunday. It'll show me. Then this is where it gets a little interesting. Hey, I notice you commute a lot to this spot. Well, it's going to take you 24 minutes if you leave now, given not only your normal route, but the traffic conditions. That's interesting. And you can customize it. You can add more features. But I think the truth is Google's thinking, oh, we don't really want you to have to intervene at all. What we'd like you to do is just kind of knows. It follows you around. It knows where you go. It knows ahead of time what you want before you even know it. So this Google Now, this is, I think, the little camel's nose under the tent, the little wedge that Google is. Gotta just get used to this idea that maybe we know what you want to do next. And hey, here's the information. Isn't that nice that we know that? See, you don't mind that, do you? Next, they're going to put it in the glasses. You know, oh, we know what we know you're hungry right now because you usually eat between 12 and 12:30. So there's a restaurant around the corner. We know you like it. In fact, would you like us to order that thing you like ahead of time so that it's ready when you arrive? See, this is the problem. It's a little creepy, but it's also a little cool. Creepy and cool. Google's very happy today because they won. The Department of Justice and the Federal Trade Commission were investigating Google for, among other things, the accusations of the competition that they were putting their own results too frequently in the general search results, and the Federal Trade Commission said, "No, you know, they're not doing that." Some critics wanted to see changes to how Google's algorithms actually work, which I don't like the idea of the government telling a search engine how to do its job. But FTC commissioners decided unanimously that Google was not violating antitrust law. So, there's a political action committee called Fair Search, which represents, of course, Microsoft, Bing, and Yahoo and others, who said, Fair Search says the FTC's inaction on the core question of search bias will only embolden Google to act more aggressively to misuse its monopoly power to harm other innovators, even though the government said there's no monopoly. Yelp is an example. Yelp was not happy about how the fact that Google uses Zagat, which it bought, and Google Places, and gives it priority of result over its own, you know, Yelp's results. I guess ultimately, you know, we get to decide. You don't like it? Don't you don't have to use it. That's, I guess, what the FTC was saying. What do you think? You scared? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's talk right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I just, for some reason, Google doesn't scare me. I don't care what Google knows about me. I don't think Google is like, see, I think part of this comes from the idea that we anthropomorphize machines. We assume they're like humans. We assume that Google's spying on us is a human, is an actual human.
Going, I see that Leo every day drives 15 minutes to work. I'm going to make a note of that.
There's no human. It's all done. First of all, there's too many of us to make that of any use at all. No humans doing it. It's a machine, another computer making some bits and bytes, saying, okay, feed that information in. So I think that if you think it's a human, and of course Microsoft does its best. Microsoft really is the one that's leading the charge against Google, and they do their best to make you feel like it's a human. Remember Gmail Man reading your mail? Come on. That's just not right. Let's go to the phones. Anise is on the line from Santa Clarita, California. Hi, Anise. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good, and yourself? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
My question is, I got a new Mac Mini, and I wanted to know the correct steps in setting it up. I have an old Mac Mini that's like almost 3 years old, and it was having problems with the USB fluctuating on the circuit board. And so the Genius Bar recommended me to get a new Mac Mini. And I have a Time Machine set up.
I love it. And you believe them. Apple said, get a new Mac Mini. And you said, sure, okay. It is 3 years. And a computer times, that's a middle-aged computer. It's interesting how the Genius has the trust of people. Because normally, if you went to a tire store and they said, well, you need new tires, I guess you'd buy new tires. What else are you going to do? But you might think in the back of your head, I wonder if they're just getting me to get a new computer just because they want to make another sale.
Well, they did an integrity check, and they said that my hard drive was fine. But the I have like 5 USB ports, and they're all fluctuating in power. And the problem is, I have several external hard drives, plugged in there, and I've been having problems in the last year with my hard drives being shut down and. And then my computer was shut down, and then I would have to start it back up. And it's just, I'm starting school in spring, and I just don't want those kind of problems.
Yeah, I don't blame you. Now, one solution they could have perhaps suggested, I would have suggested, is, well, let's try plugging into a powered USB hub. So the hub has its own power supply, and that would make the power to the drives consistent. Are these drives powered by the USB port, or are they powered... Do they plug themselves? Do they plug into the wall?
Well, some of them are plugged directly on the back of my Mac Mini, and then I have one, central USB hub that's plugged in, and then I have several external drives plugged into the hub, the USB hub.
Okay, so one thing, and I don't think the Apple guy did you a good service here. One thing they should have said is you don't want to... So there's two kinds of USB drives. There's what we call bus-powered. That means... The only connection they have is to the computer. The computer is giving them the power to spin up and everything. And then there are USB drives that have their own power supply that plug into the wall. Mm-hmm. You don't want to use more than one bus-powered drive on a computer because, it's going to fluctuate. You can't try. I hope you weren't running 5 drives off of that USB bus. That would be unreliable.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me again, do any of these drives plug into the wall?
Oh, you mean the USB port?
No. Do any of these drives plug in to the wall? Like you got to plug, plug the computer into the wall, right?
Yeah. Yeah, all the hard drives are plugged in for electricity.
Oh, they are. All of them are plugged into the power outlet on the wall.
Yeah.
They all have AC power. Okay, well then then saying that the power to the drive is fluctuating is meaningless because they're not getting the power over USB.
Mm.
So, see, I think the Apple genius is not so bright here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you already, first of all, you already bought it, right?
Yeah, but I haven't opened it up yet.
Okay. So, what, you're running five hard drives, really, on your computer. That's a lot of drives. Why do you have so many hard drives off of the computer?
To back up my photos and my art, Illustrator files and stuff.
Right. And you need five different ones instead of, like, say, one big one?
Yeah. How many should I have?
Well, five should be all right. It just seems like a lot.
They're like little hard drives. They're like 1 terabyte, one is 2 terabyte. I mean,
that's not that little. that's pretty big. You got at least 5 terabytes of backup. I would say a couple of things. I would say that you probably want to see if you can consolidate some of those drives and make it fewer drives. Or maybe get something like a Drobo or a network-attached store, an RAID array that's, bigger. I think you're going to have unreliability when you have five USB devices all reading and writing all at the same time.
Excuse me, I called you like a couple of months ago. Like, I had a keyboard that was plugged in to the USB, and then when I would type on the keyboard wouldn't type anymore, and then I would have to shut down the computer and then start it back up, and then you recommended to get a Bluetooth, which I did, and then I didn't have any problem with the keyboard.
Now, maybe you are having USB problems, but it could well be that you have five hard drives. So think of it. You've got this USB bus. And all of those ports, despite how you could have 100 ports, they're all still going on the same bus. And it's just it's like a traffic jam in there. And that could be why you were having unreliable USB keyboard keys as well. I would say it's probably a good idea to disconnect some of those hard drives and see if things are reliable with one or two hard drives.
Okay.
And see how that is working. And I think we want to kind of rationalize this system. It's tempting to just keep plugging these drives in. But I think it's not surprising that they've gotten a little unreliable. USB can, somebody, Cosmic Ray in the chat room says, well, USB can support 128 devices. True. That merely means it has addresses for 128 devices. I'm not sure I would want to use 128 devices, and I'm not sure how reliable they'd be if you plug them all in. So see if you can get away. See if one drive is reliable just by itself. Then plug in another one and see if it's reliable. I'm a little disconcerted that the Apple Genius, there may have been other information that he had, but I'm a little disconcerted the Apple Genius said, oh, no, you need to buy a new computer. I don't know if that's the right answer. But it might be. Maybe he has more information. Maybe there's other things not working right. Maybe there's other problems.
I read that the life of the computer is about 3 years, and then anything after that is, like, good for you.
No. Hard drives, maybe. So what happens with hard drives is if they don't fail right away, like in the first few months, they're pretty reliable for 2 years, and then they start failing. This is a study Google did, because Google uses more hard drives than God. Google did a study, and they found that hard drives failed at about 7% a year after year two. But no, many computers last a dozen years. That's not, 3 years is not very long. Not very long. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, I thought it'd be a good time to mention, since the Gizwiz is coming up here. Hello, Dickie D!
Leo, how are you, pal?
Do you ever use Gazelle? You should be a Gazelle user if ever there was one. No, you know what he does? He puts it in the gadget warehouse.
That is exactly the problem.
There's your problem, Dick. If there were only some way you could take those old used gadgets and get cash for them instead of spending money storing them.
It's a crazy, crazy idea.
You got that old iPhone 4S, and you say, I'd like to get an iPhone 5. What can I, actually, it's an AT&T. What kind of money could they, $240? All right. Then you add it to the box. They send you the box with the mailing. They pay the shipping on anything more than a buck. As long as you got a box, throw some more stuff in there. I bet you have an old BlackBerry you don't use anymore.
My phones at the warehouse go back to 9X.
They don't want those. I'll tell you right now. No 9X, folks. Free of water damage. What's the value of that? $38. That's, you know, it's not a lot, but it's a bold.
Better than sitting in a drawer.
Better than sitting in a drawer. They pay you instead of you paying for storage. iPods, iPads. GAZELLE.com. You got to keep this in your address book. Gazelle.com. They lock in the quote for 30 days, so you have 30 days to get the new thing you're replacing. And to get the data transferred over. You can get paid by check or PayPal, or if you want an additional 5%, get that Amazon gift card. Offer's good for 30 days. They've paid almost $50 million to over 300,000 customers. Free shipping, fast processing. Gazelle.com. Scott Wilkinson's here, our home theater expert. He joins us every week. Woohoo! And I know you're getting excited. You're probably packing right now because... It's time to travel.
It's time to travel. I am, in fact, packing up my old kit bag and heading off heading off to Vegas.
What do you bring? What is in that kit bag? I know you bring a pedometer.
I do bring a pedometer, and I got a new one for Christmas. My sister gave me a new one for Christmas, so looking forward to trying that out. Last year, it was, I think, 35 miles I walked.
Holy cow. So we should tell people where you're going. It's the Consumer Electronics Show, which... it's technically the floor starts on Tuesday, but Sunday night, everything gets underway.
That's right. There's CES Unveiled, which is the first big thing of the show Sunday night. I'm not going to that. I am going to a Toshiba party Sunday night. And then Monday all day is press conference day starting at 8 a.m.
So what is this all about? What is the story here?
Well, the Consumer Electronics Show is... It's certainly the largest consumer electronics show in the United States, if not the world. I think IFA is bigger in Germany, but certainly in the United States.
150,000 attendees.
Most of the locals in Vegas take this week as vacation week because it's so crowded.
Unless you're a taxi driver, limo driver.
Right.
Yeah. But if you're a croupier, if you're a dealer, it's like... These guys don't gamble.
That's right.
We're going home.
We don't gamble. We don't do anything. We just go to the show.
Who has time? I'm not even. I'm going Sunday night. Coming back Wednesday morning. I won't even have time to eat.
That's right.
I'll be walking and eating the whole time. I love to go to Vegas for the restaurants. I'll just be waving as I walk by.
Yeah, I do take one night out of the whole time I'm there to go see a show. And this year I'm going to see Jersey Boys. I hadn't seen that before.
That's
so
a fun show. I always like to go to the Cirque du Soleil shows when I'm there.
I've seen all
They're
of them
so
that
good.
Are in Vegas.
What's
They're
your
so
favorite?
Good.
My favorite is Love.
Mine is too.
Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely.
And I'm a Beatles fan, but even if you're not, I think the production in every respect it's amazing.
Is amazing. Yeah. The other one I really like is Ka over at MGM Grand.
Haven't seen
which
that
one has
yet.
A stage that is a hydraulic stage and it moves around and ends up being vertical at some point. And some of the dancers are like on bungee cord things and they're bouncing around. It's really amazing. A lot
Always
of fire
good.
Too.
Fire's good. Water's good. So here's the good news. I understand. I'm told by our chat room that Snooki is going to be at CES. Whoa,
oh, man,
how exciting!
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, can't
Lady
wait.
Gaga was there 2 years ago for, of all people, Polaroid. Polaroid's kind of making a resurgence. They're big at CES this year.
They are. They have a bigger booth each year in the last couple of years. It's true.
I don't know if it's the same Polaroid or somebody licensed the name, but whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
Meet the Swinger, Polaroid Swinger. They don't make that anymore. No more instant photography.
You're dating yourself.
I know. But apparently Polaroid's going to be opening print shops where you go with your digital photography, your digital camera.
Oh, that's
and you're
an
going,
interesting idea.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Also a surprise, a big name from yesteryear that has not been a great name in televisions, Westinghouse, is announcing a 4K, what is it, 100-inch?
110-inch.
LCD in 4K.
Yep. In fact, 4K is going to be the big story at the show, I think, for me, home
video. All right, what is 4K?
4K refers to the resolution, the number of pixels on the screen. High-definition TV has 1920 pixels across by 1,080 pixels up and down. That's a total of about 2.2 million pixels on the screen.
2.2 megapixels. Now, you know, if you had a camera that was 2 megapixels, you'd laugh at it.
You'd laugh at it. Well, 4K increases that number of pixels by a factor of 4. So you have roughly 4,000 pixels across by 2,000 pixels down, giving you about 8 million or 8 megapixels on the screen.
Holy cow. Now, that's a big jump.
It's a big jump. And if you have a large enough screen, it really makes a big difference. It's very clean, very clear, super sharp. With a smaller screen, it doesn't necessarily, you can't really see much of a difference because your eye, the human visual system, can only resolve down to a certain size.
So if you think about it, the smaller screen means the dots on this are equivalently smaller.
Correct.
And so you're not going to see dots when they're that small, so you don't need
correct.
That.
Unless your nose to the screen, right. Unless you're right up against the screen.
It's true on most HD TVs. If you get up that close, they have that screen door effect.
Exactly right. Yeah. Exactly right. Or even if you're in the movie, go to the movies, and you sit in the front couple of rows, you'll be able to see the pixels if you look for them.
Right.
Now, the big advantage of 4K, which I know you're not going to be too impressed with, is that it allows 3D using passive glasses, or what we're going to see at the show this year, I think, in big way, is glasses-free 3D. Now, the reason that 4K works so well there with that is that with passive glasses or glasses free, only half of the lines, the horizontal lines, are directed to each eye. But with 4K and you have 2,000 pixels up and down, that means you have 1,000 pixels per eye, which gives you essentially normal HD resolution in each eye without having to have these active glasses that blink on and off and give people headaches and cost a lot of money and have to be recharged and need batteries and so on. All you need are the simple polarized glasses, or in the case of, let's see, we're going to see Westinghouse, maybe Toshiba certainly will have 3D 4K without any glasses at all.
Now,
another company is called Ultra D.
One thing I want, couldn't care less, so we'll go, let's move on. One thing okay. I hate 3D. One thing I want to know about, though, is Samsung sent out a very strange invitation to a new television. And it, first of all, the picture, it looked like it was portrait mode. It was taller than it was wider. And it looked like maybe it was clear. What's your insight? Do you have any idea what this is?
I don't yet. I can't wait to go see what it is because it was a very mysterious thing. As you said, they kind of leaked out this little bit of information and they have this photograph of a TV in portrait mode, basically a widescreen TV that's tall instead of wide.
Is there any – is it conceivable that they would actually be doing that?
No. I can't imagine that they would make a TV that was meant to be watched that way.
Why would you want that?
The other rumor about it is that it's clear – that when there's not an image on it, you can see through it.
Which means you could see your wall.
Exactly.
So,
and I'm going,
big deal.
Why would you want to do that? That's useful in a storefront.
Yeah. Put it in a window, maybe. Yeah.
Put it in a window or on a refrigerator so you can see how much milk you have left before you order it on the same screen. But as a TV, I don't know.
I think Samsung, I'm looking at the invitation. I think Samsung blew it. They just wanted to imply that it's a window. It's probably a 4K. Or maybe even an Ultra 8. There's this higher resolution, right? This Ultra HD. That maybe that's an Ultra HD set. And they're trying to just say, it's like looking out a window, which is what I've always said.
You know, that may very well be.
Yeah.
And certainly we will find out. I'm going to be
Wednesday, right? That's Wednesday morning?
I don't know.
I think they're having an event.
Oh, well, that may be. I have to go look at my schedule.
Yeah.
I do know that I will be talking with Samsung on Tuesday as part of the Home Theater Geeks, my podcast on the TWiT network. I will be talking with LG and Panasonic and Sony and Sharp and Samsung. And certainly I will be asking them about that strange TV.
I look forward to it. Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guru. And, of course, he'll be back here next week with a CES wrap-up. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I wasn't going to say anything. Little Jersey Girls action for Scott Wilkinson. Actually, you know, it's actually a great show. I saw it in San Francisco, and it actually is quite a good show. Probably not the first thing I would go do in Vegas, but yeah, you know, he's seen everything else. He's been there. He's done that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It is the CES, the Consumer Electronics Show. Starts, tomorrow night with CES Unveiled. There's a bunch of press conferences Monday, and then the show floor opens Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. I'm going to go. I will be doing a few different things. There actually, New Media Expo starts tomorrow. Blog World New Media Expo at the Rio. So I'm going to go early. Go out there for that. I'll be giving a keynote speech at New Media Expo on Monday. Hosting the podcast awards Monday night. Tuesday, I'll be, if you're at CES, come by. I'll be at the Ford stage and talking to a variety of Ford people. Scott's going to be wandering around doing his home theater geeks. He does a podcast for us, and that'll be available later in the week. He talks to all the TV manufacturers. We have quite a few people actually on the ground at the Consumer Electronics Show, and our Twit podcast network will have a lot. But then, of course, next week I'll have all the information for you. No booth this year. We decided to go do the Microsoft thing. Microsoft's not going to have a booth either. In fact, this is the first CES I can remember where there'll be no keynote from Microsoft at all. They replaced Microsoft's tradition. It was Bill Gates for years. Last year, was it Steve Ballmer? I guess I can't remember. Maybe that's why they stopped doing it. I can't remember. This year, Qualcomm will be giving the big speech. Yeah, it's a little chip company out of San Diego. I have to wonder, truthfully, what the future holds for big trade shows like CES. When you've got the internet and everything's available all the time, it seems silly to wait to do what Samsung's doing. I guess you get a little buzz, right? Problem is, it's not just Samsung, it's thousands, literally, of companies all trying to get that buzz out of the same 3 days. I think you could do better doing your own events, doing your own press, you know, briefings. The internet exists. There's there's plenty of coverage now. I don't think you really need a big consumer electronics show anymore. That's just my thought. Let's get to the phones. Next call from Colton, California. Nick is on the line. Hi, Nick. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo, hi. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. Happy New Year.
Thank you.
Question for you. My wife is doing a small business. She's starting it up. It's consulting for homeschoolers.
Ah, what a good idea. That's a big and growing market, that's for sure.
Exactly. So, want to do a website, and it's a simple. Well, she wants to do a simple website. She doesn't want to complicate. She wants people to basically be able to look at their smartphone and not get frustrated trying to get things on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
So, with GoDaddy, we took out a couple of domain names, basically logcabineducationalconsulting.com, and we're just wondering what's the best way to, you know. I know they have website builders there, but is there...
Don't. Whatever you do, do not use GoDaddy's website builders. Don't use their hosting either, frankly.
Don't use their hosting?
No, they're terrible hosting.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah. So what you're talking about, there's two ways to handle this. You can do what's called a mobile site in addition to a regular site. If you go to twit.tv, for instance, that's the podcast site I do. If you go on a mobile device, you'll get a different site than if you go on a normal computer because we paid thousands of dollars extra to have a custom mobile site. But that was last year. This year, the thing that everybody's doing is called mobile responsive design, or responsive design for short. And if you go to Tech Guy Labs, which was designed a year later, it'll look exactly the same, except it'll resize itself for the different screens. And that's really probably what you want, because the idea of having a separate site for mobile, it adds complexity. It's hard to keep up. I would recommend something that is responsive design. That's the modern thing to do. You can, of course, get, if you're using a WordPress or another, you know, content management system, you can get templates that do that. But I think you probably should look at Squarespace. Now, you've registered the domain name at GoDaddy. That's fine. But that doesn't mean they have to do the hosting. They're just a domain registrar. So you haven't lost anything by going to GoDaddy. You had to register the domain name anyway. But I would look at something like Squarespace.com. When you go to, now I should give you a disclaimer. They're a sponsor on the podcast network. But if you go to Squarespace.com, you can do a design yourself that is automatically responsive. They won't let you do anything that's not going to work on all screen sizes. For instance, you don't want to do flash. That won't work on most mobile devices, right? 99% of mobile devices. So if you did some flash, you'd be leaving out all those mobile users. You want something that's going to look great on a tablet, even on a smartphone, and, of course, on a desktop. So that would be one choice. That's the one I'm particularly familiar with. But I would just I would be very careful about using the design tools that most low-cost hosting companies like Squarespace offer. They're really pretty junky. They haven't been updated in years. I think Squarespace is probably the right way to go for you.
Okay, thank you for the advice.
Yeah.
It.
You can, you can try it. They have a 2-week free trial. You can try it and just see if it feels good to you. If you have, if you're going to get it, what they do is they give you a starting point template. You don't need to be a designer. You use their tools, which are very easy to use, but also extraordinarily modern. And that's the big difference to design a site. Try it for 2 weeks, no cost, and see if it works for you.
Okay. So if we use them, we can put that on the use that with the domain names you register with GoDaddy.
Yeah. GoDaddy is primarily a domain registrar. They offer hosting and other stuff as an upsell, but you don't have to use their hosting, and I don't recommend it.
Okay.
Thanks, Nick. I appreciate it. Yeah, I'm not. You know, one of the nice things about Squarespace actually is they if you buy a year. Subscription with them, they'll actually register that name for you too. But you've already got the name, so that's all right. Easy to transfer the name, by the way, to a different registrar. They never own it. Cosme Ray in the chat room is saying a 1&1 is another good one. I haven't tried it. I have to say, I haven't found anything that's as good as Squarespace, and that's not because they're a sponsor, but because they really know what they're doing. I would not use GoDaddy. Now we'll talk to Peter. Hey, Peter, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello. I'm a Carbonite user too.
Thank you. Oh, good. It's just nice to know you have a good backup, isn't it? You just kind of can forget about it. Yeah.
Yep. And what I'm trying to do is get more hard drive space. I'm trying to do iTunes Match, and I've been trying it for about 6 months or so, and it tells me try again later.
What? It says, yeah, we don't want your business.
I've signed up for it.
Try again later.
Yeah, I've signed up for it, paid the money. And whenever I start iTunes, it says iTunes is looking at your library. And then all of a sudden they...
hang on. Let's talk about it when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, a good day to you. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy, and it's time to talk about computers and the internet, cell phones and camcorders, MP3 players, home theater, iTunes, and more. 8888-ASK. Leo, that's the phone number. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, if you'd like to ask about the Consumer Electronics Show, which is coming up, starts tomorrow in Vegas, 8888-ASK-LEO. We were talking to Peter in Wisconsin before the break. He's using iTunes. Now, Peter, you're using the latest iTunes, I'm sure, right? iTunes 11?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So that's question one.
I've gone through iTunes like 6 and, 10.6 and beyond. I've always kept it up to date.
Good.
And it tells me that it can't complete the iTunes match because of an unknown error.
Ah.
Number, and it gives you the number of the unknown error.
Yeah.
And it says, try again later. And like I said, I've had this for about 6 months.
What was the number, just out of curiosity?
4001.
Ah, the world-famous 4001 error. Well, there you go. Actually, and I presume you've checked Apple to see what 4001 means.
Yeah, I've checked in the forums, and all I've seen is lots of other people have that error, too. But really no answers.
And yeah, I'm looking at a actual support discussion at discussions.apple.com. I get error message 4001 when trying to upload music to iMatch. And there were recommendations like deauthorize and reauthorize machine, update the Genius, fresh install, blah, blah, blah. I'm wondering, so when you look at your iTunes library and you look at the status, is some stuff matched?
No, nothing's matched.
Nothing is matched.
No.
Has anything been uploaded?
No.
No. So it's got zero progress, in other words.
Yes. There are a few things that are available on cloud only because they've been stuff I bought from my iPod.
Right. If you ever buy anything, you don't even have to match it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow, I'm looking at this thread and it goes on and on and on. and sometimes it apparently just clears itself up. So now I'm wondering if it's So have you gone to this solution at masteryourmac.net? Let me look at the solution before I recommend it.
Yeah, well, I'm using a PC.
Yeah, but I wonder if it turn off iTunes Match, turn on I. The solution is that if you turn it off and on again, it might work. That's crazy. That's crazy. God, I don't know what that is.
I've tried that.
You have, I'm sure.
Yeah. I've turned it off. And then in an update, I thought when it would update, you know, like after I went to 11, and now it's 11, what is it, 11.1? And I thought, well, maybe I'll try it again.
Yeah. Boy, you got me. I don't know. And apparently people who are having this problem are having it on Macs as well as PCs. So it sounds like it's more of a server error than it is a something specific to Windows. So in our chat room, Toilet Bug says, stop the background processes in services, reboot, and then try it again. It sounds like what he's saying is, you know, there's a, you know, you've got a service in a loop. And so stopping and starting it isn't really stopping and starting unless you go to services. You know how to go to services on Windows? You right-click on My Computer, you select Manage. You go to the services and find the match service. Stop it. And then maybe, I don't know. You know, somebody says that if some of his music files had the word error attached to them, he deleted those files and then it worked. So that could happen in the sense that iCloud's going along matching, and then it just gets stuck on something. That could be it. It sounds like there's a bug in iTunes Match that a lot of people are experiencing, frankly. I mean, I'm looking at this thread. It's been going on, by the way, since 10.5. So it's not something new to iTunes 11.
No, now, I've had it since like 10.6 at least.
Now, one of this weird fix is to hold down the shift key while you're selecting turn off match. Maybe that is another way of turning off all the services. Try that. Turn it off with the shift key held down and then turn it on again with the shift key held down. Actually, no, don't hold down the shift key. So turn it off with the shift key held down. That is a strange solution, but according to this website, it works. I don't know why it would work. I'm going to have to investigate that. My suspicion would be holding down a shift key when you're turning it off is kind of a turn off the service as well kind of a thing. So it might be the same answer. I'll tell you what. Keep listening, Peter, because maybe somebody will call in and say, oh, yeah, that happened to me. The other thing I'd suggest everybody, and I want you all to know about this, we got a great website, techguylabs.com. We're writing everything down. James DeRuvo, as I do the show takes notes, puts it right up on the website right away. And then Josh Windisch on my team up here goes through it after the fact. And we make a YouTube video of the show. He attaches each question to the video of, like in this case, Peter's asking the question and me talking about it. And then, we've got a synopsis of my answer with links to, for instance, this show note or a tech note that I was talking about from Apple. And then there's a comment field. And I would encourage you, if you had this problem and fixed it, or you'd have some suggestions, that you comment in the comment field. Mark in Boston says, I had this problem. I fought with iTunes support. Mark actually called iTunes, said, and they never admitted anything, but it magically got better. Interesting. So we'll put that thread up on the show notes. We'll put that thought. And if you've got another thought, go to the show note comments. And that's techguylabs.com. And put your 2 cents in. Jeff in Pasadena, California. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo, I have an interesting situation.
Yes, sir.
At my work, I'm running some very old Macs. They're PowerPC Macs.
Yeah.
And things are starting to happen. So it's inevitable I'm going to have to get a new Mac.
Yeah.
Problem is my main use is I'm using a graphics program that's old that hasn't been made for the Mac for years. So it's not going to work on the new machine with the new operating system.
Right.
So aside from, I'm sorry?
Right, because Apple has eliminated support for any PowerPC software.
Correct. So if I have to get a different graphic program, like Illustrator, for example, which is way overkill for what I'm doing.
What are you using?
It's a program called Canvas.
Oh, I remember Canvas. Great,
yeah,
great program.
Yeah, it was great, but then it started getting really buggy, and I'm on Canvas 10, and they haven't been a Mac version for years. The problem I'm having is I've got thousands and thousands of files that are saved in native Canvas formats.
Oi!
So, unless before I do the move, I manually open each one and then save it again, like as a TIFF or something that any program can. Is there any way to automate that program? Because, I mean, that's going to take a long time.
What you want to do, I think the ideal would be to, and we'll see if we can find it. You're going to have to keep listening because I'm taking a break, but we'll see if we can find it. But the ideal would be to find a modern program like Illustrator that could open Canvas files. Chatroom will help me with that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That's obscure. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. If you're trying to figure out why we're playing The Clash, we have an in-studio visitor. We have an open studio, and I do invite you all to come by anytime you're in the Northern California area in Petaluma, California, because you're welcome to come and join me as we do the show. And Matthew's here. He's visiting from London, even though he's a Seattleite, but lives in London now. I have to explain, Kyle, because nobody knows the conversation I've been having.
They should all follow in chat.
Right. If they were in chat, they'd know. Exactly. 8888 Ask Leo. We have an interesting question that is not unusual. There are a lot of people kind of in this boat. If you have an older Mac, well, this is a really old Mac based on the PowerPC chip before Apple went to Intel for its Macintoshes. And you have a program that requires that, or a program that requires an even more modern program designed for the modern Intel Macs, but that aren't using Cocoa, you're going to have problems because Apple's eliminated Rosetta, which allowed the new Macintoshes to run older Macintosh software. And Carbon software even isn't going to work on the new Macintoshes on Mountain Lion and Lion. So if you've got, say, something like Canvas that you love, you're going to have some problems. So, one thing we might want to mention is this program called Graphic Converter. Now, I'm looking to see if it supports what is the Canvas file format? I don't know off the top of my head. But you might check to see if, and there's a trial version, you can see if it works. Graphic Converter from Lemkesoft. It's $40. Lemkesoft. I'm looking to see. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't seem to support the Canvas format, which is pretty obscure. Chat room saying CVX, CNV, or CVS. wow. None of the above. we're gonna have to punt on that one. Graphics Converter is a great program that will handle over 200 file formats on the Mac, converting them from one to the other, and will do batch mode. But in this case, it doesn't handle Canvas. What we really need is a program that can open a modern program on the Mac that can open Canvas files. We shall have to keep looking. Let's go to Wyoming. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. To whom do I have the pleasure of speaking? I don't see your name on here. Hey, Brad. Brad, are you there?
He just dropped.
Brad went, I don't want to talk to you. Okay. Okay. Let's go to Brooklyn then, one of my favorite towns. Peter's on the line. Hi, Peter.
Hi, Leo. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Welcome.
Thank you. I just purchased a new Mac Mini. Oh. And what I want to do is basically using Boot Camp, I want to put Windows 8. Or if you don't think Windows 8 is that good, I would put Windows 7.
Okay.
But I want to do it with a USB key rather than a CD.
Yeah, that's totally doable. Both Windows 7 and Windows 8 installers can be put on a USB key, and you can do the install from there. You don't even, it's probably even a little bit easier than that. Let me just see if they've updated Boot Camp yet to work with Windows 8. I know that Windows 8 support was marginal. Well, it works. It doesn't work directly, but it works. Windows 7 absolutely works. So what Boot Camp is a really clever idea, actually. From Apple, it allows you to partition your drive, that is, divide a single physical hard drive into two virtual hard drives, one of which can be a Windows boot disk. So you can boot right into Windows and make that Macintosh a Windows computer, just like any PC. And since Apple is using Intel and pretty stock hardware, it's not a very difficult thing. They do need to provide drivers for the version of Windows you're using. And I think that that's kind of the issue at this point, is that I don't know if Apple has yet updated the drivers. But apparently there are ways to work it out. I see a number of articles on the web that say, here's how you get Windows 8 working with Boot Camp. So it's really what you got a copy of. Now, nowadays, by the way, Microsoft does allow you to download an ISO, and that's all you really need to do the install.
Okay.
So you don't need to make a boot drive. You just need to have the ISO disk image on the USB key, point to it in the Boot Camp installer. It'll say, yeah, I see it, and go from there.
Okay. Thank you very much, Leo.
You're welcome. You're welcome. There is one little caveat, and this is only going to be for people who have brand new Macintoshes. If you're using the Fusion drive, the new 3-terabit Fusion drive, there's a little hack to get that working. But we'll put a link in the show notes to that. That's from the chat room. But if you just, most Macs, you don't have that problem. The Fusion drive is something new. In fact, I just ordered one of the new iMacs with a 3-terabyte Fusion drive. The idea of the Fusion drive, which is very clever, is it's actually a two-drive machine. And one drive is the solid-state fast drive. That's a smaller drive. And then you have a larger spinning drive, but they look the same. And then the operating system decides what needs to be on the faster SSD. So instead of doing as I do in many cases, putting the operating system on the faster solid-state drive and my data on the other drive, the spinning drive, because it's bigger, even though it's a little slower, the operating system says, well, that needs to be here, that needs to be there, moves it around automatically. And I think it's a very clever idea. I haven't really seen a lot of reviews of it yet. So I thought, well, I better order one and see how it works. It seems like a good idea. Seems like a good idea. Alex, Fort Myers, Florida. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo, I love all the stuff you do.
Thank you, Alex. I appreciate it.
I had a question. I just got my MacBook Pro's battery replaced, and I was asking an Apple Store employee what would be the best way to make it so I won't have to get it replaced anytime soon. And she said that I should leave it charged all the time, even if it's at 100%,
But then I asked somebody at an Apple reseller in the Central Florida area, and they say when it's at 100, you unplug it and then wait till it gets down to 10 and then plug it back in and keep that going.
The Apple Store, according to the latest thinking, and this changes all the time, the Apple Store gal was right, that the best thing you can do for a lithium-ion battery is to keep it fully charged. If you're not going to use it for a length of time, the best thing to do is to discharge it halfway. You know, in other words, you're going to put the laptop in the closet for 6 months. Discharge it halfway. But if you're not going to if you are going to use it, you just want to have the best battery life, keeping it plugged in all the time, according to the latest research. And by the way, lithium-ion battery research is a lot like diet research. You know, there's a fad every 5 minutes. It seems it's a little strange. There is deep cycling, which some for a while people recommended, where you discharge it all the way and then recharge it, is actually bad for the battery. We used to tell people, don't leave it plugged in. That's bad for it, but that's apparently not the case.
Well, maybe in a few weeks it'll be something different.
I think we can rely on this one. I'm hoping we can, because that's the advice I'm giving out. Leave it plugged in. The Apple Store was right. That is the right thing to do, according to the research I've seen. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Johnny Jets here. He's our travel guy. He's all over the world traveling so we don't have to. Or something. Hey, Johnny, where are you right
now?
Where are you these days?
I'm in Delray Beach, Florida, at my sister's house. About to go to the airport in 15 minutes.
Beautiful, but don't tell us where you're going. Next week, we'll go back to our quiz question of where in the world has Johnny Jet gone?
All right, good.
You wrote an interesting article. Johnny joins us each week to talk about using computers and technology to travel better. You wrote an interesting article. I saw it on the Huffington Post. It's also at johnnyjet.com, your website. We've talked before about using Twitter to improve your travels. These are 13 travel tweeters.
13 travel tweeters to follow in 2013.
So people often say to me, oh, Twitter is useless. It really depends on who you follow. And if you're interested in travel, then following these guys can help you a lot.
These guys will not disappoint. And these 13, I mean, you'll learn about deals. You'll learn about the news, travel news, insider tips, some apps, everything. So these are the ones I follow.
So give me, I don't think we'll get through all 13, but let's get started.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Airfare Watchdog. I've mentioned them before on your website. They do a great job at tweeting out unpublished airfare deals and also some interesting consumer travel tips. But again, actually just 2 days ago, they tweeted a deal from JFK to Honolulu for $422.
Wow.
The one I put in my story was $383 because that was from a month ago. But they have, deals across the world. And sometimes I've seen deals L.A. to Brazil for $190-something round trip.
This is a TripAdvisor affiliate.
They actually bought them. TripAdvisor bought them.
TripAdvisor bought them. That's cool.
Yeah.
Do you like TripAdvisor? Do you use TripAdvisor?
I kind of have a love and hate relationship with them.
It's like Yelp for travel. It gives you reviews of hotels, airlines, things like that. And yeah, I always, I read it with a grain of salt. I always read it, but I read it with a grain of salt.
That's, exactly.
Sounds like what you do.
You can't always trust it.
Right.
With TripAdvisor, if you're going to go to a hotel and you want to find out if it's good, you can, tweet it out to your followers or put it in Facebook and ask your friends
if
they've been there.
Anybody been there?
And they'll tell you the truth.
Twitter traveler number two.
All right. Sean O'Neill. He's based in London. He's a freelance travel writer. He used to write for the Budget Travel magazine, and now he's a travel tech columnist for BBC Travel and T News, which is a travel news website.
So this is somebody like you. This is somebody unaffiliated, and I like that because you can kind of trust them.
For sure.
Yeah.
And he's a great guy, and he knows stuff. Put out with Huffington Post Travel. I don't have to really talk too much about them, but they have so many contributors and so many articles, and they constantly tweet. So you always find something to do in travel. And the same thing goes for USA Today Travel. They do actually a better job on the latest travel news and deals and trends. So I like to follow them.
So all of these are twitter.com/ and then the thing that Johnny says, in this case, USA Today Travel or HuffPost.
Correct. Or you could go to Huffington Post or my website, and I'll have the link on there, and I'll tweet it out after the show. But another guy I really like is Globetrot Scott. He's an airline reporter for Associated Press.
He
travels a lot. Yeah, and he does a lot of investigative reporting. So he does a good job on that stuff.
Apparently, I love his Twitter icon is him wearing one of those life jackets that they always say will inflate.
Yes.
And apparently he got these dunked.
I think that was on Delta. I think he went down to Atlanta and did a tour of their aircraft maintenance. Another guy was based near you in San Francisco, Henry Hartfelt, and his Twitter handle is H Hartfelt, and he is a huge industry analyst, and he's always quoted in every single newspaper and magazine when it comes to travel. And he works for Hudson Crossing, but he's a great guy to follow on Twitter.
We'll put We'll put all of these on Johnny's website. You can just click the links one by one. Did you make a list on your Twitter of this as well?
You know, I did not, but I should.
Yeah, because then I can one click. Get back to work. What are you, lazy? Because then when one click, I could follow all of them.
And this other guy, Where's Andrew? He's National Geographic's digital nomad. He travels 24/7, basically, and he tweets a lot, but he shows you from A to Z the experience of traveling and photos of his food, everything. Accommodations. He does a really nice job, and he actually taken a bus from Washington D.C. all the way to Antarctica, including a couple ships, obviously.
Wow. Yeah, there must have been some ocean travel.
Yeah.
You know what's interesting? I mean, here's a guy. This is a guy you want to follow if you like to travel. 22,000 followers. He's just kind of unknown, and we're going to do our best to change that.
He's a great guy.
Yeah.
And then this other guy, Chris Guillebeau. He's based in Portland. He's been to almost every country in the world, and he's big on frequent flyer miles. One time he showed secrets on how he earned 800,000 U.S. Airways bonus miles.
Oh.
That's how he caught my attention.
Yeah.
So you know, I started learning tricks from him, and so I like to follow him. And then another company, New York City Aviation. They really shouldn't be called New York City Aviation because they actually cover U.S. aviation. I think they're going to change their Twitter handle eventually. But they will tweet out the breaking news and flight delays and all kinds of weather.
Is this a magazine? I mean, who are these guys?
No, these guys are plane spotters.
Oh.
NBC, I learned about them on the Today Show a couple of years ago. Al Roker went out and did some plane spotting with them, and they kind of made fun of them. But these guys are hardcore.
But if you wanted to know where to see the new Airbus or a Dreamliner, they would know.
If you like planes, like today they tweeted, you know, today at JFK, the Lufthansa 747-800 series is going to be landing there, and also the Etihad Formula One plane is going to be landing.
I love that.
Stuff like that.
That is geeky. I love that.
And I think we have time for one more. Heather Poole. She's a flight attendant for a U.S. major carrier. She has a best-selling New York Times book out right now called Cruising Altitude. She has 80,000 followers, and she just tweets. She tweets her experiences, what the passengers were like for the day.
Oh, man.
She'll talk about anything. She tweets a lot. She's another one who tweets a lot.
She doesn't say who she's a flight attendant for, though.
She does, and they're not allowed to. I mean, you can pretty much figure it out.
I'm surprised she gets to do. Yeah, I'm surprised she gets to do this. They haven't.
Yeah, there's a bunch of tweeters out there like that.
Wow.
Delta Lena is another one. She's the girl, the redhead in the Delta.
I'm in love with Delta Lena.
She's like, don't smoke.
Yeah, it's the only airline safety video I'll watch. It's Delta's.
Air New Zealand's actually has the best one.
They have a Hobbit one, right?
They have all kinds. They're amazing.
Peter Jackson's in one of them.
Yes. They do amazing things.
Do you mean they do more than just that Hobbit one?
Yeah, yeah. Every 6 months, they have a different one. They had the whole All Blacks, their rugby team. They had one that they're all naked. They painted the uniforms on the actual flight attendants and the pilots.
You know, they're smart because it makes you want to watch the safety video. And everybody's seen that 8,000 times. Who would want to watch
exactly?
Who'd want to watch it again? But now Delta can never change their safety video because Delta Lena is just like an icon. She tweets, huh?
You know, they actually did change it a few months ago, and she has a cameo in it, which I think is kind of lame. She should have been the star of it.
Yeah. Is she an actual flight attendant?
But
she's not an actress.
Actually,
huh?
I'm flying Delta. No, I'm not flying them tonight, but I'm flying them next week.
She's not an actress. She's actually a flight attendant.
you know, my internet just broke up a little.
That's all right, Johnny. We got what we need.
What's
go
that?
To Johnny. I was just asking, is she actually a flight attendant or is she an actress?
You move over.
Yeah, he can't hear me. That's what happens with Skype.
Oh, no, she's an actual flight attendant. She's an actual flight attendant.
So if you fly Delta, you might run into her.
Yeah.
Wow.
She's based in Atlanta.
Wow. Johnny
I'm
Jet.
I'm friends with her.
You are? You know Delta Lena? Can you arrange a little meet and greet?
Of course.
I'd like to meet her.
Of course. All right.
Now there's a reason to know Johnny Jet. Go to johnnyjet.com. He's got the article there with a whole list of 13 travel tweeters you need to follow. He'll join us next week at the same time. Thank you, Johnny. Safe travels.
Thank you.
Leo
Take care.
LaPorte, the tech guy.
Put away for takeoff.
Now sit back, relax, and enjoy your journey. May the
I'm 32 here, Leo.
You and your bed grow ever longer.
May the sun shine warm upon your fly, you fools.
Wow, makes you want to go to New Zealand just to fly Air New Zealand and see that safety video with the Hobbit. And there's quite a few cameos in that. It's pretty good. Pretty good. It's a hit, too. I think any time you can make a safety video that people want to watch, you're on the right track. Leo LaPorte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. That's the number if you have a question, comment, a suggestion. If you'd like to help me out, helping you out, love to do that, too. 8888. Ask Leo. Johnny Jet, I should mention, besides being at johnnyjet.com, also is on Twitter. You should follow him, at Johnny Jet. At Johnny Jet. That's his Twitter handle. You follow him, you probably get all the information you need. And certainly he has lists. If you go to his Twitter page, and you have to drill. You know, they've changed on Twitter how you get to lists. But you can remember that? You can make a list on Twitter of people that you think is worth following. He's got some great lists. Great stuff. 8888 Ask Leo. Back to the phones we go. Carl in Camarillo, you're next. Leo LaPorte, the tech guy. Hi, Carl.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing well. I wanted to call because I've got multiple hard drives, external hard drives, and I've just kind of done a cleanup. You know, it's that end of year kind of time to get those things you've been meaning to do off your to-do list forever. So I
yes.
finally went through and kind of consolidated things. You know, I had some kind of waste, and I was trying to maximize the space usage. And I've done that successfully, but now I'm trying to decide how much longer I should depend on these. I've got a terabyte time capsule that's 5 years old. I've got a 500 gigabyte Seagate that's probably 6 or more years old. And believe it or not, I've got an old 120 gig ADCOM hard drive. Exactly.
Wow.
From like the late 90s.
Yeah.
They all still work, though I have noticed that the time capsule, which is pretty much on all the time, the other two actually have very little hours on them, so to speak. They kind
right.
of sit there, and then when I need them, I turn them on. But the time capsule is doing the time machine thing for me, so it's on pretty much all the time when my computer's on. And I have noticed a little bit more noise. It's a little more,
yeah.
you know, I'm hearing that hard drive a little more than I used to.
Yeah.
And now I'm about to start doing a massive dump of videotapes that I have taken literally over the last, like, 12 years of my family. I finally got a machine that can transfer the small compact cassettes onto my hard drives. But I want to put them on a hard drive that I know I can depend on and or set up a good backup system. And so I'm just wondering what you think, what's the expiration date on a hard drive? And I know it's probably not a hard number, but what's your sense before you want to start rotating those things?
Well, first of all, you should always assume that it's going to fail. So anything you only have one copy of is basically at peril. So that's the point of a backup, is the assumption that hard drives will fail. And you know, I think sometimes people say, well, look, I've got this time capsule. I'm backing up to it so I can delete the original because I've got a backup. Well, that's not really a backup anymore. That's a single copy.
Right.
So that's the first thing to remember. You want, truthfully, three copies of everything if you can. But to answer your specific question, of course, you don't know. Some hard drives go forever. Some hard drives don't go very long at all. The best information I've ever seen came from Google a few years ago. In fact, if you search for Google hard drive study, you'll find this. Failure trends in a large disk drive population. It was published at the 5th USENIX conference on file and storage technologies in 2007. And it's based on the fact that Google has literally hundreds of thousands of hard drives in use at all times. And they keep a lot of telemetry on all of these hard drives. So they have a very large set of data. on these drives. As you might imagine, I mean, it's not surprising, and it's in their interest, of course, because they have to replace hard drives when they fail. So what they found is kind of interesting. They annualized failure rates. And what they found was that there's a certain amount of, I guess I would call it, probably politically incorrectly, infant mortality, that the drives will fail quite a bit in the first few months. They say around 3% of all drives. Another 2% will fail in 6 months, 2% in 1 year. But then in the second year of life, failure rates go up to around 8% per year every year thereafter.
Oh.
And that's kind of what you would expect, because what they're saying is you can't predict how long a drive will last. It might die right away. It might die in the first 6 months or the first year. But the likelihood of it failing starts to go up dramatically in year two and goes up by 8% each year after that. In other words, by year five, you're really running, you know, a pretty good chance that that drive's going to fail. Now, these are drives in constant use, I should point out. So that's part of it as well. You know, if you took data, put it on a hard drive, and put that hard drive aside, as long as it was stored correctly, the chances are pretty good that drive would be operable, you know, within 5 to 10 years. It's that you're keeping it constantly working is the thing, and that time capsule is a perfect example. It's always on, always writing, right?
Right. No, that's a great point. You know, that thing's making a little more noise than I'd seem to used to.
Yeah, and that usually is bearing wear. Those wear, right, over time, those bearings that the drive's spinning on. The other thing that drives get noisy in a way that may be a little unexpected, all drives have bad sectors. Drives also get sectors that start to fail. And when a sector becomes hard to read, not unreadable, but hard to read, the drive will labor a little bit. And you'll hear more as the drive is trying to read that sector. It may try to read it a couple of times. Three times, four times. Eventually, it'll give up. So there are two different kinds of noises. One is bearing failure that tends to say or wear. It sounds a little more rattly. The other one is a little bit, and it's maybe hard to tell unless you put your ear right on the drive. But in both cases, that's signs that the drive is struggling a little bit.
Right. All right. And one other thing I was going to mention is I wanted to see if I could get your help. You helped me last spring with a little litmus test on my website. I mentioned the name when I was on with you guys, and of course, you
want me to bring your site down again? Okay, let's try it.
I've got it on a new server. We've kind of made it a little more robust and added a lot of enhancements since last March when I talked to you. So I was going to see if you could help me.
Sure. Tell me the site name. We'll see if we can bring it down.
Sure.
Ready?
The site's name. You might remember this. The site's name is TotalCarScore.com.
How's that doing, by the way? I loved the idea of the business.
Right, right. It's doing well. You know, we're getting a lot of play. You know, the media seems to...
You compile reviews from a variety of sources and give the car a score. Is that it?
Exactly. Rotten Tomatoes for cars.
And, that's the elevator pitch, and that's a good name for it. Boy, if it's well executed, this should be a no-brainer. In fact, I would expect Google to come snap you up.
Yeah, well, it's doing really well for us. You know, we added some enhancements that I think really helped it in the last, like, month, where we put it some color coding on the scoring, and we put some ratings for the scores. You know, how good is the car recommended, or is it average, or is it below average? So it's just that much quicker to see, oh, this car is one of the best ones, or, you know, it's not one of the best ones. And then we added a homepage player that features the various road tests and comparison tests we've done recently. You know, in the last month, I was in the Viper, and I was in the Vanquish.
You got a good gig.
yeah. So, it's a lot of fun. Doing the site's fun, and it seems to be, really, really doing well. And we're just...
Well, everybody, try to bring it down. TotalCarScore.com. TotalCarScore.com. Seems so far to be pretty robust. I've been clicking around. It's nice and fast. Carl, good luck with it. I love this idea. I remember talking to you last year, and I think we brought it down at the time, and it seems like we can't do that. So that's good. I guess he's using Amazon. Yeah, it's hard to bring Amazon down. TotalCarScore.com. Good luck, Carl. Very nice. welcome. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. It's time to talk about computers and the internet, cell phones and camcorders, digital photography, home theater, and all that jazz. Anything with a chip in it. iPads, Android tablets too. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's my number if you have a question, comment, a suggestion. Maybe you want to answer a question asked earlier. Put in your 2 cents worth. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the number. Back to the phones we go. Edgar is very patient, hanging on from San Diego, listening on the great KOGO, Kogo in San Diego. Hi, Edgar.
Hello, Leo. Good afternoon from sunny San Diego, California.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
Oh, man, I can't. I was just thinking, reminiscing about arriving in San Diego, I think about 38 years ago.
Wow. What is it? Just to make me feel bad, what's the weather like? It's sunny, it's warm.
Well, right now, we're getting pretty cool weather, but right now it's about 65 degrees.
Oh, perfect.
And that's cool for this time of year. Us. Well, not for this time of year. That's cool for San Diego. That's what we call winter.
Winter in San Diego. What can I do for you?
Well, I've got a 5.5-year laptop, which has been limping along in the last few months, and I'm just trying to keep it alive until its replacement arrives. Long before its performance became unbearable, I've been using a couple of applications that I installed just on your recommendation alone, Leo.
Uh-oh.
ESET Nod32.
All right.
And Carbonite.
Good man.
The Carbonite, I guess that's the reason for my call. I do the Carbonite backup, of course.
Okay.
And I also generate periodic disk images.
Yes.
I've been using, well, I don't know if I'm allowed to.
You say any brand name you want. I encourage people. Look, we're here to make sure it's easier and help you. I don't want to keep anything a secret.
Okay. I've been using True Image Home by Acronis.
Yep. Great product.
And I have few complaints about that, except that I always have difficulty installing it. I don't know what it is, but it complains during the install, and I just keep reinstalling it. Sometimes I just ignore the errors that pop up,
right?
And it works anyway. But no, it works great. I have used it a number of times. In fact, within the last few weeks, I replaced the hard drive on my laptop, and I used that product to.
You're in good shape in both cases. And so let me explain what the difference is. So Carbonite, the idea of Carbonite is it's kind of a continuous incremental backup. You make the first backup set, however long that takes you, depends on how much data you have, how much your upstream bandwidth is. And then anytime any files change, it's automatically uploaded to Carbonite. So it's what's called an incremental backup. And in theory, if everything's working well, you should have a full backup set on the Carbonite servers at all times. Disk image is a different idea, but also extremely useful. I wouldn't rely on any one system, by the way. It's always good to have multiple backup systems working. And disk image, sometimes we call it a ghost because the original imaging program was Norton Ghost. Remember that from some years ago. The idea is it takes whatever state the disk is in right now, good, bad, ugly, malware, whatever, and makes an exact clone of it in a single large file. That can be restored. So think of it as freeze-drying the disk, that it can be restored very quickly using the same software to a new disk. So it's a great way to clone a disk, and this is how I use it, or save a disk that's in a state you like. So the way I use imaging, when I first install Windows, I immediately do an image. Then I do a second image after I've done all the Windows updates, install the apps that I know I'm going to want, you know, get it to a state where this is really the state that I normally want to start at. That make an image of that. That's the one if I want to reinstall Windows. Instead of running the installer, I just blast that image back. And then you could periodically make more images, but remember that those subsequent images are copying anything that's wrong as well as everything that's right.
Yep, that's correct. And I have been around long enough to remember Ghost.
Yep.
I liked that program. It was I remember one time I stayed up all night. I was determined I was going to get my computer back, and there was one little glitch in there about.
Oh yeah. Well, and that's the negative of an image program is it's an all or nothing thing. So if somehow the image fails, unless you've verified it, you could think you have a backup and you don't. And that's one of the reasons I like Carbonite and any backup program like Carbonite with its making not a blob, but in fact a copy of the hard drive in a way that you can look at it and say, yeah, I've got that file. Yeah, I've got that file, so forth and so on.
Well, Leo, what I'd like to do, you know, for me, the idea would be to get all my backup solutions from the same place, you know.
I disagree.
Really?
Yeah, because I understand the charm of having to deal with only one vendor, but yeah. The whole purpose of backup is for it to be heterogeneous, that you don't rely on any one thing. That's why we talk about this 3-2-1 backup, three copies, two different forms of media, one offsite copy. The more variety in your backup strategy, the better. If you rely just on images and those images aren't working, then you have no backup. If you rely just on Carbonite and Carbonite fails, then you have no backup. So I think it's a good thing to have multiple backup solutions.
Okay, and I understand what you're saying. I didn't mean that I wanted one type of backup. I was hoping to get all of those kinds of backups from one vendor.
No, I understand. And again, I think a reliance on a single vendor is not as dangerous as a reliance on a single type. But still, you know, it's a monoculture, and monocultures are always a little less robust.
Okay. Because I guess...
And Carbonite doesn't offer an imaging service, and as far as I know, there's no imaging service that offers online off-site backup. So,
well, Carbonite... Well, the reason for my call was that Carbonite is now, for lack of a better term, advertising something they call mirror image.
Ah, see, I didn't know that.
And I was...
There you go.
Ask your advice.
I should probably talk to my friend over at Carbonite, David Friend, and see what's going on. So that sounds like an imaging solution, huh?
Yes, and I've tried it once. I'm having some problems, and unfortunately, Leo, I don't know whether the problems I'm having are due to the age of my computer or whether it's something else.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you one thing. I don't like the idea of making an image over the Internet. There's just too many things that can go wrong.
Oh, no, it does a local. It does
it's local.
To your local
okay,
drive.
Okay.
So you can hook up a USB.
Yeah, I'm just not familiar with that, so I would take I would take a look at it. But, you know, there are so many great imaging programs. If you don't like Acronis or you have weird problems installing it, EaseUS.com, EaseUS.com has a free imaging program that's good. Clonezilla is an open source imaging program, a little harder to use, but because it's actually... a bootable disk, it's a great way to do an image because it's kind of not part of Windows.
Okay.
Clonezilla.com. I think it's fine to get it from a variety of sources. What if, you know, God forbid, because I love them, but what if Carbonite suddenly decided to call it throw in the towel?
Yes.
Right?
And I just want something that works.
Heterogeneity in backup is a good thing.
Yes. Now, you said EaseUS,
EaseUS.com. Clonezilla.com, drivesnapshot.de. These are all excellent imaging programs. I think that probably Clonezilla, because it's free, would be the first to start with.
Okay.
Acronis is not. Acronis is very good. I've recommended it for years.
And it's relatively...
It's not
reasonably.
Yeah, it's not horribly expensive. And for something like this, it's foolish to say, well, I'm only going to do free things. This is so important. Yep. That you don't want to mess around. But many people in our chat room love Clonezilla. It's harder to use.
Okay.
Because you have to, you know, it's kind of Linux. But but it has some advantages. On the Mac, by the way, and Web2043, you're absolutely right in our chat room, says, on the Mac, super duper, and I highly agree. It's a great backup and cloning solution. There are a lot of ways to do this. Edgar, I'm really impressed, though. You're clearly on the right track. You're asking the right questions. You want to have a good backup, especially when that new computer comes so you can restore quickly. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Well, something round for days and kept me up all night. Cheer up in my loft, a giraffe in my loft.
There's a giraffe in my loft. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Kyle Benham is back, baby. We missed you, Kyle. Good to have this strange music back. Kyle Benham, our musical director, back from vacation. He's referring to something actually I was talking about during the in the break. This is a weird bug. Somebody told me about on Google. I guess it's on Google Now. G. Byers said, ask Google Now what is a giraffe, and you get a strange bug. So we're going to try it. You want to try it? All right. The Google Now is basically Google Voice Search. And I don't know if this works with voice search elsewhere, but let's try it here. I'm going to press this text-to-speech button. What is a giraffe? And now it'll answer.
African mammal giraffe, a Camelopardalis, family giraffidae with a very long neck and four legs. Having a coat pattern, he now praises the iPad.
What? So it's kind of Google's version of Siri, right? So it found a definition of giraffe. I said, what is a giraffe? And it started reading it to me. Then the definition, the text on the screen ends with having a coat patterned with, and then an ellipsis. I guess there's more, but they don't include it in the excerpt. And for some reason, Google Voice just sticks in, he now praises the iPad. By the way, this is on a Galaxy Note. I don't think Google really... So it's clearly a bug. It's clearly a bug. The same thing happens if you go to Google Translate and you ask it to translate the English phrase condemned video filled with. It does the translation properly on the text side, but if you play the English version back, it sticks some text in. Remember, I've just typed in condemned video filled with.
Condemned the attacks in this video filled with so much drama. He now praises the iPad.
And the same weird glitch. Skynet is clearly involved here. Skynet has gone crazy. Ah. 8888 Ask Leo. Am I talking to myself or are we on the air right now? Okay, I'll keep talking and we'll see what happens. Strange little bug. Strange little bug. I don't know what's going on, but I have a feeling. It sounds to me like it's a very common flaw that is, in fact, the root of a lot of hack attacks, called a buffer overflow. When you write a program, you allocate memory for the program and you use that memory, but sometimes you use more than you allocated. You overflow that memory area. And what's outside the memory area is kind of undefined, is random. And hackers can use this by putting code in that undefined area and getting you to execute it. In this case, it sounds like we've got a text-to-speech buffer reading more than it's supposed to, reading on into memory where the same thing is stored over and over again. Something about using an iPad. Very strange. DeSogi says in our chat room, maybe now praise the iPad is an inline ad that the robot ends up reading. I don't think so. I think it sounds like it's some sort of buffer overflow. It doesn't sound like... I'll play it again. So the typed text that it's going to try to read here is condemned video filled with. But what it says
condemned
is...
Condemned the attacks in this video filled with so much drama, he now praises the iPad.
That doesn't sound right at all. This bug has been around for a while. Web9320 is telling me in the chat room it was posted on code.google.com back in October. So I guess I'm not telling anybody anything new. It's being reported as a weird bug in Google Now, but I think it's more than that. I think it's... It's Google Translate means it's more. In fact, there's an article at Business Insider. There is a weird Google bug that praises the iPad. Developer Paul Kafasis has been tracking this. It says, when using Google Now or having Google Translate speak aloud the phrase, he now praises the iPad, is spoken by Google. By the way, they added other text. You heard when I read when it tried to read the speech. It was more than just that. Apparently, all you have to do with Google Translate is at an end with to anything you type in. At an end with. And instead of saying at an end with, it will always say at an end. He now praises the iPad. This has to drive Google crazy. It'd be one thing if it said he now praises, you know, Google Reader. He now praises Google Plus. They'd be thrilled. But he now praises the iPad. That's got to bug Google no end. If you write Kevin walks at an end with in Google Translate, it'll say Kevin walks at an end. He now praises the iPad. Now, I don't know why it works only with what is a giraffe. This guy, Paul Kafasis, who's been tracking this, says, this bug is thus stating that when the app is asked to define the precise nature of a giraffe, a completely random phrase is tossed into the mix. It's been reported 3 months ago. Google has not acknowledged it. This is the strange. This is the funniest thing I ever heard of. He said, now praising the iPad. This is really interesting. I mean, 4.3, believe it or not, is supposed to make everything faster. Okay, I'm back.
Hey, Leo.
Whenever you want me to pick it up, yeah, I will. Generally, that's the intent. You know, when Apple updates the operating system, they
I'm ready when you are.
Write it more efficiently.
I'll wait.
So forth.
Yeah, I'm going to put your mic on.
One of our chatters, Jason, in the chat room says he's seeing the same thing. Weird, huh? Let's go back to the phones. Lots of calls. I hate to leave anybody hanging, like Bryson from Minimal's Fall. Wait, we talked to Bryson. I'm not going to repeat that one. Let's say hi to Bert in Northridge, California. How about that one? Hi, Bert. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking the call.
My pleasure. What can I do for you?
Yeah, I have an old digital diary from Casio, if you remember those.
A Casio digital diary? That's wild. Do you have stuff on it?
I've been using it for business for years.
I love it. Oh, you still use it? Room. Yeah. What did it have, 64K?
No, this one had a megabyte.
Ooh.
Yeah, big time.
Ooh. Well, you know, it worked.
So anyway, I've been looking for something to replace the doggone thing, and I can't find anything.
Well, wait a minute. What do you mean? Something like that?
I'm out of room.
Yeah, but you don't want another Casio digital diary, do you?
Or something like it, something that'll do the same.
How about a smartphone? Would a smartphone be adequate, or is that not enough for you?
No, not really, because I want something that I can use separately from the smartphone that I use for business to look up customer contacts. And the main thing is the wildcard search that the digital diary had. In other words, if I'm looking for customers just in Arizona, I can put in AZ, and only my Arizona accounts will show up.
Yeah, That's not too hard to do on a smartphone as well. For instance, chat room suggesting, I agree, there's a program called Evernote that will work on your computer, works on everything, every smartphone made, and it has those kinds of searches. It's a kind of a free-form database, and what's nice is it syncs. So you can put the data in on your desktop and then have it be on your smartphone. Even your iPod Touch would work. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Mary Jane from Melrose Park, PA. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Mary Jane.
Hi. Nice to talk to you, Leo.
Nice to talk to you. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I think you may know my nephew in Menlo Park, Steven Schwarzegger.
Oh. What does he do?
Well, he's retired right now. He used to work for Cisco Systems.
Oh, that's neat. That's really neat.
Yeah, but he recommends you highly. So,
oh, isn't that kind of him?
I've known you for a while.
Well, yeah. Thank you. Thank him.
My question is about my brand new Samsung Galaxy Note 2.
How do you like it?
I love it. I've only had it a week. I'm still learning wonderful things. But my question is about a spam filter.
Okay.
Do I need one? Do you recommend
one?
Well,
you don't run it on the phone. Who provides your email?
Comcast.
Okay.
And I use Outlook.
And you use Outlook with Comcast.
Right.
So, generally speaking, what you want to do is have the email filtered at the source, at the Comcast, and then what email is picked up by your phone is already filtered. It wouldn't make sense to have a spam filter on the phone.
Okay. All right. Because I seem to be getting a lot. I don't get it on my computer. It goes right into my junk mail.
I see what's happening. I get it. So
happening on my Galaxy Note.
So because you don't have that same folder on the Galaxy Note, you're getting all that stuff. Yeah, I get what you're saying. What you really want to do is get rid of the spam and have it just not appear at all. One of the things, you know, it's funny, we don't talk about spam much anymore because most people have moved to online email programs, particularly Gmail, Google's mail, that have such good spam filtering that it just doesn't come up anymore.
Yeah, I do have a Gmail account. But
I would use your Gmail account's going to work best with your Android device anyway.
Okay.
And if you used Gmail, you know, what you can do is have Gmail pick up your mail from Comcast.
Right.
And so everything goes into the Gmail box. And then Gmail has excellent anti-spam filtering. If you get a spam message on Gmail, you just say, hey, this was spam. And from then on, it'll be smart enough not to get that spam anymore. What Google does that makes it so effective is something called collaborative spam filtering. Based on the millions of people who use Google Mail and people saying, hey, that was spam, they've got humans, in effect, doing the spam filtering.
Okay.
And it really is better than any software solution I know of. So I would say use your Gmail as your primary mail account. Have Comcast, have it pick up the Comcast mail.
Okay. All right.
And I think you'll be happiest with that solution on your Android device.
Okay. Sounds like a
and
plan.
Say hi to Stephen for me.
I will do so.
All right.
I'm a grandmother techno nerd, I think.
It sounds like it. If you've got a Galaxy Note 2, that is the geek phone.
I upgraded from a Droid Razr on your recommendation.
Excellent.
Actually.
Yeah, of course, as you know, I'm a Happy Note 2 user.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So
good.
That's why I went ahead and bit the bullet.
All right, Mary Jane, the geek grandma.
Stephen is now an Apple convert. So
uh-oh.
I don't know.
Uh-oh. Well, you know, no, the iPhones are quite good too. I don't have anything against the iPhones.
Yeah, but I don't have anything else Apple, so I figured why go iPhone.
And using Gmail with an Android phone really is the best combination. Of course, Google makes it so, doesn't it?
Doesn't.
Yes. I wonder why. Let me scratch my head and think about that. Hey, thanks for the call, Mary Jane. Great to talk
thanks,
to you.
Leo,
all right.
Care.
All
bye
the
bye.
Best. Yeah. Yeah. In general, if you're using Android, just as if you're using Windows Phone, you want to use Windows Live and the Windows services. And if you're using an iPhone, it works with everything. But, you know, it kind of works best with Apple stuff. Similarly, if you're using an Android phone, Android is a operating system that's kind of sponsored by Google. They don't sell it, interestingly enough. They offer it for free to phone manufacturers. But if you're using Android, it just seems to work best with Google. In fact, one of the interesting points that I hadn't really thought about, one of our chatters said that because Android supports a special email protocol that works with Gmail, it's actually going to use less battery life. I didn't know that. With the Gmail push. So that's actually a compelling reason. You get battery life. Interesting. Mike in Fullerton, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Leo. Hey, we go back to the C-band tech TV days with you.
C-band. Oh, man, when we started, it was ZDTV back in those days. When we started it,
ZDTV.
Yeah, we weren't on any cable networks, and so our earliest viewers were getting us from the satellite directly via those big C-band dishes.
That's what I had.
Man, that rocks.
I have a quick comment.
Yes.
What's the best way to manage your photos on an iPhone 4S? Seems like I have duplicate photos everywhere.
Yeah.
I can't seem to get rid of them
Yeah, and some of this is PhotoStream. Because of the way Apple does it, only Apple really has full access to that camera roll. So really the best solutions are going to be Apple solutions. I would spend the $5 on their iPhoto for the iPhone.
Really?
I love it. And it has very good organizational capabilities. No third party can do what it does because third parties have very limited access to the camera store.
Okay.
That's why programs like Camera Plus, which is a great photo app, shoots to its own roll, right? Because it can't and then if you wanted to, you could save it out to the camera roll. But it doesn't have that same fluid interaction that only Apple can do because Apple doesn't give third-party developers access.
Right.
for the iPhone?
I like iPhone. It's $5. It's not for taking pictures. It's right. for doing what you want to do, essentially managing them.
Okay. I've been looking at it, but I guess my $10 gift card for Christmas will buy
There you go. That's one. Now you can buy something else, too.
My comment is, why can't Apple come up? I'm sure you remember the Trio 300s. Why can't they come up with a drop-down window to help manage your contacts?
Wouldn't that be a nice way to do it?
Like, so for instance, you want to put all your restaurant, well, have a box to check that it's a restaurant, and it goes into a category with restaurants. Or you have a category with everything, you know.
See, this is related to the previous question, because Apple doesn't give third parties full access to your contacts. So right. It would be a simple thing for somebody to write a program that would be better managing your contacts, but they can't. They can only import your contacts and then manage it from there.
Why can't Apple come up with something?
Well, like then that's the real question, and that's just Apple doesn't, you know, it should be operating system level. I agree, just like the Trio.
You're familiar with what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah.
From the Trio 300.
I would look at, there's a new program that I've been using on the Macintosh called CoBook. They just released an iPhone version. And I found it to be a very smart address book.
CoBook?
COBOOK. It's free on the iPhone.
Okay.
I haven't used it much, but I do use it on the desktop, and I find it to be the smartest phone book app there is, because it uses categories, but uses hashtags as categories. So it's.
I've come across restaurants that I like in different states.
Right.
And if I go to a state and I'm trying to remember the name of the restaurant,
right. What you would do with that entry is you'd hashtag restaurant and then hashtag the state. So hashtag restaurant, hashtag Arizona, and then you could search that way.
What I've done is I put AZ /hyphen and then the name of the restaurant. So when I go to Arizona, I can just type in AZ in the contacts,
yeah.
And all the restaurants in Arizona will pop up.
Yeah, you could do this, except that you would use hashtags to do the same thing, so it wouldn't pollute the content stream. It would just be it's a very advanced way of categorizing. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, the Gizwiz, right after this.
A three-ring king of the carnivals and summer fairs. Tumbling clown.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're watching our team converge on Las Vegas, Nevada, where the Consumer Electronics Show gets underway tomorrow. Father Robert Ballesser, we're watching him speed. No, I think you can go 76 miles an hour on that highway. I don't think that's illegal. This is kind of fun because we're using a program called Glimpse. I don't know if you've ever tried this. Glimpse with a Y. And you put it on your phone, and then you send somebody a text message saying, I'm on my way. And then you can, you know, you can watch them arrive. It's good if you're late a lot, which I am. But it shows the map. Now, he's going to arrive in 7 minutes. He's a few minutes out. I'm sorry, 7 hours. Oh, he's just on his way. Driving down I-5 at top speed. You go, Father Robert. Meanwhile, Dick, are you gonna? You're gonna fly. You're gonna take a jet airplane, right?
Yeah. I have an 8:30 flight tomorrow morning.
All right, you're going out to Vegas. And what are you expecting to see at CES? What are you excited?
You know,
I'm not excited at all. I'll just tell you the truth.
No, I am excited.
Are you?
You know, I go looking for the crap downstairs.
Yeah,
but I mean, I want to go upstairs. You know, LG. One of the trade papers I get said that LG will be shipping their 55-inch OLED TVs in Japan starting next month.
In Japan is no good to us.
I know. And it's also 10 grand. But
yeah.
I'm hoping they have it there because the biggest I've ever seen is a 25-inch.
Yeah.
Oh,
no,
you know,
we saw it last year.
This yeah, Padre has a good excuse. He could be chasing a sinner. So he can't speed.
Let me ask you, is it a sin to go faster than the speed limit? You're a good Catholic boy, is it?
Let's see. You need a good excuse.
I think it's a minor sin.
It's a minor sin, you know?
Oh, he's slowing down now. He must be listening.
he stopped. He's kneeling by the side of the road.
This is amazing. You can actually see this on Glimpse. It's incredible.
That is so funny.
Anyway, CES is fun. It's just crazy. I mean, we're trying to get a car right now, and there's no cars available. 150,000 people. Taxi lines are hours. You can't get around. The logistics are a nightmare. And there's thousands and thousands of products, so it's hard to see everything.
No, absolutely. So I have a lot of embargoed press releases that I've been reading through. I've been trying to make lists of things I want to see and in what hall they're in. So when I'm there, it's not so crazy. And this is like maybe my 25th CES.
Wow.
So you sort of get what, you know, you walk in the front door and you sort of go, I'm tired.
Yeah.
I've seen a thing and I'm tired.
Day one, first minute. Exactly. Your feet are already hurting. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, do you want to do a gadget? Do you want to talk a little bit about CES?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, one of the gadgets I'm going to look for, it came out a little early this year, and it's called Unbo Bean.
I like the name.
Yeah, okay. So, you know, we always take charging cables with us.
Yeah.
And we take something to prop our gadgets up so we can watch movies on the airplane or in the hotel room. So this company had a very clever idea that they went on Kickstarter. They were looking for $10,000. They got $212,000.
Wow.
So what they did, Leo, was they took a charging cable and embedded it in a flexible steel cable. So not only does it charge your device, but when you hook your phone to the end, you can bend the cable.
So it's like a gooseneck lamp charger.
That's exactly right. Yeah. That's exactly right. For some bizarre reason, they're at FuseChicken.com.
Well, obviously they have challenges with naming. FuseChicken.com.
And they make a 1 foot version that's about $30, and they make a 2 foot version that's $28, and they make them for Android.
But here's the point, it's stiff enough to hold the device up.
Yes. And Leo, you know, you could wrap it around anything. So if you were in the kitchen, you could wrap it around a countertop handle and have the phone hang down. So that's the whole object, is that it's a phone holder, charging, syncing cable, all in one.
Now, one thing I got to point out, it doesn't have lightning. Okay. So if you have an iPhone 5, you're going to need to get an adapter to work with this.
Yes, you use the adapter.
It's probably just going to fall right off.
That could be.
Yeah.
That could be.
Okay, I look forward to you trying this, not me.
Oh, okay. Well, I tried it here at my desk, but I'm going to try it on the airplane.
It didn't fall off?
No, I'm using it with my Galaxy 3, and on the airplane, I plan on using
I wouldn't
want to
put that kind of stress on the charging port.
Oh, you know what? You're absolutely right. I didn't think about that. I will not be using it. All right, so I'll have it down. I'll have it down at a very low level.
I mean, go ahead, be my guest. Use it all you want. To me, it makes me a little nervous that the weight. It depends. I guess if you have a light phone, it's not a big deal. But the weight of the phone is resting on the charging port.
On the charge. Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. Yeah. You're absolutely right.
I put a lid. Okay. Put a lid on that one, didn't I? If you want to go to gizwiz.biz, you can see where
the new contest is up.
Unbo Bean is, as well as play the What the Heck Is It contest. That's a chance for you to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. Brand new game began January 1. I'm going to go there. I'm just curious because I haven't seen. First of all, what was that? It looked like a bow and arrow. What was that?
Several people got it right. It's called the Cord Snake.
Ah.
And it was to when you have two things joined on with an extension cord and you're drilling and you walk 10 feet, it unplugs, or a vacuum cleaner unplugs. So the two cords lock into this little plastic device and you can walk around and drag the secondary cable with
Nobody got it exactly right, but they kind of
got
the idea.
Yes, one person did. So, Dick, the Cord Snake, I've been using it for 2 years
now. I love that thing. That's great.
Yeah, I love it. But, you know, the thing is that the funny answers are better. You know, handcuffs for criminal toddlers, the home trapeze kit, they're out of business due to lawsuits.
Yeah, no kidding.
And a very silly thing, hangers for clothes you would like to see on the floor. It's very clever.
Now, this one is tougher. I don't know what this is. It's very interesting looking. I'm not going to guess because...
Because you're always dead on.
I always get it right, and I don't want to ruin the contest.
You always get it right out of the box. Yeah. It's just amazing.
What could that be? Somebody says it's seahorse bait. I don't know. Here's what you do. Go to gizwiz.biz and click the What the Heck Is It button on the right there. And go, and you can see the picture. Now, the idea is to come up with a clever name. You've got 12 autographed Mad magazines for the right answer, but 24 for the best clever answers, even if they're wrong. So, you got a couple of months to do this, but... This is interesting. This one's really interesting. It is completely not obvious. It looks like it might be a magnetic dart with a clothespin on the back or something. I don't know. It's a mystery.
You get so close. It's worrying. When he puts this wild guess, my heart's in my mouth.
Anyway, what the heck is it? Gizwiz.biz, and we will see you at CES. Actually, if you stay tuned, folks, we're going to do a special edition of the Gizwiz show right after the radio show. On our podcast network, twit.tv, Dick will talk about his CES preview. And then next week, we'll see what you liked.
Perfect. Right.
Thanks, Dick.
Perfect.
I'll see you then.
I'll be here.
And I'm headed out to CES tomorrow night. I will be at the New Media Expo and Blog World doing a keynote there on Monday. If you're at the New Media Expo, please stop by. If you're going out to Vegas for CES, if you go to the Tech Guy Labs site, techguylabs.com, we've got a 20% off coupon for you for New Media Expo. I'd love to see you there on Monday night, Podcast Awards. And then Tuesday at CES, see you there. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.